Yesterday we had a discussion about Huchsa Kafran, and we said that there are two cases that are very similar. In both cases he's proven to have fabricated his claim, to lie under oath, so to speak, for the same sum of money. There's no difference in how much he's stealing, but yet in one case he's called a Kafran, he's Pasul Yedus, Pasul Shvua. In the other case he's not a Kafran. And this is the sheet of Rabbi Abba, which is here on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. And Rabbi Abba says, HaKofer B'Milva, as opposed to Kofer B'Pikadon. So he has two cases. One case is where the Lova denies that he got the money, and it turns out that we prove that he did get the money. And the other case is where the Mafkid gave an object over to the Shomer, the Nifkad, and the Nifkad denies that he has the object. And it turns out that there's testimony against him that he's holding on to his friend's object. In the first case, he's kosher liyedus. That's called a kofer b'milva. In the second case, kofer b'pikadon, he's posel liyedus. And based on this Gemara, the kal v'chomer of Rabbi Chiya is problematic. Why? Because if you recall, Rabbi Chiya tried to establish with the kal v'chomer that if you combine Eid Echad with Modu Mitzas, what you get from both of them is that there's a Chiyuv Shvua. And yet in the case of Edim, there also should be a Chiyuv Shvua. How are you today? So the Gemara thinks that we should apply the principle of Huchsa Kafran in the case of two Edim. That's Rav Chiya's case. So let's go over Rav Chiya's case. Reuven is Tovea Shimon, and Shimon denies the claim. Then Reuven brings in two Edim, and he testifies on half the claim. And he supports, obviously, the Tovea, in this case we'll call Reuven. So the Gemara thinks that Shimon in this case gets 50, and Reuven should be Pasul Yedus Ulshvua because he's a Huksa Kafra. We have two Edim testifying that at least half the amount of money he certainly is pocketing. And the Gemara says, but that's against Rabbi Abba, because Rabbi Abba holds that a Kofer B'Milve is Kosher Yedus. He's not called a Huksa Kafra. So let's try to analyze what's the difference between HaKofer B'milva and a kofer b'pikadon. In both cases, he's denying a claim of, let's say, 1,000. There's no difference in the value. And in both cases, we have testimony to establish that he was a thief. He was trying to steal someone else's money. So here we have a concept called gzeilas habe'en, meaning sometimes you're stealing a debt, which is we call it a shibud, it's abstract, and sometimes you're stealing a physical object, a material object.
You're not stealing, you're reneging.
Now, why is it that a kofer pikadon is called a ganav, is taking a be'en? Because the Torah says that when a person says that he doesn't have the object and he really has the object, that itself is a maisik zela. He might be chayv kefal for that. For example, we have a case of Toin Tainis Ganav B'Pikadon. So when it comes to Pikadon, where we're involved in a physical object, then the very moment that he decides that he's locking up that object and he's not returning it, even though he's a Nifka and he really has to give it back to the Shomer, he becomes a Ganav.
With Jashna Machshava.
not only the machshava, he's got to do some action as well. He's got to either make a claim that it's his, or maybe he has to make a kinyan. I mean, again, for that we'd have to go through, you know, really heavy sugyas throughout Shas. I gave a shiur about this topic about a year ago. Anyway, then you have a kofer b'milveh. In the case of a kofer b'milveh, he's in our language, he's stealing $1,000 because he's not willing to pay off the chov, and we know that he owes that chov. But nevertheless, he didn't steal a be'en. He didn't steal a physical object. He's denying a chov, but he doesn't grab onto someone's object. So what's the difference?
The money.
The money is somewhere stashed away, but he's already spent the money, correct? That's called milvelot son. So what it means is he doesn't have to, you know, the malva doesn't own any particular money. The malva owns a chov, and the lova has to pay that chov. If he denies that chov, he's called a kofer b'milveh, but he's not posuliyed. So the question is why? What's the difference between the two? So for this we have to refer back to the beginning of Masechta Bava Metzia. The Gemara says at the very beginning of Masechta Bava Metzia that when a person denies a claim, we're not sure exactly how bad is bad. Meaning, is he a real ganav or he's only a second-rate ganav? And in the Gemara's language, there's something called ishtamuti kamishtamit. Ishtamuti kamishtamit means that he may have a full decision to return the money, but right now he's pressed for cash. He doesn't have the liquid assets. So what he does is he postpones the payment. He's not really interested in stealing something, but for the meantime, he's denying the claim. That's called a kofer b'milveh. So if you take a look here in Rashi, bless you, Rashi says that a kofer b'milveh is koshali edus. V'lo amrinan gazlan hu. Do you have this, Rashi? It's about halfway through the Amud on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. Lo amrinan gazlan hu v'atora omer al teishes rosha aid. We cannot trust him as an aid, and for that matter, we cannot trust the shvuah. The cave unto milvel otzah nitna, that since he only owes a chov, he doesn't have anyone's physical object in his possession, that's called milvel otzah nitna. So for example, if you give me a bag of coins as a loan, do I have to return to you those same coins? Obviously not. Otherwise, why did I take the loan? Right? That would be a pikadon. The coins become mine. In fact, the lova could be Makadish and Isha with those coins. It's his. He has a chov to replace the value of those coins. Says Rashi, he came into Milvel Otzah Nitna, Dilma Tzarech Lahotzia, maybe he has to spend this money, and why doesn't he pay it back? Savar, he thinks, Adahavi Lizuzi, until I get the cash and the liquid assets, Parinole, I'll pay him back. So he's not really a full-fledged Gazlan, because he is in his mind saying, Adahavi Lizuzi, Parinole, he has full intention to pay back. V'imo dinole hashta, but if I'll admit now that he has this, that I have this debt and he owns this debt, he's going to immediately force me to pay up, but I don't have the liquid asset, so I'm going to have to sell the shirt off my back. Abel kofer b'pikadon, afilu al miktas. Well, let's say, for example, Reuven tainis that he gave Shimon two sheep, and Shimon admits on one and denies on the other. Bo edim ve'idi'uhu. Now two witnesses testify that he received two sheep. In that case, posuliyedus, why? To my havile gabi pikadon. What does he mean? He's holding on to this pikadon. He intends to return it. Lashtamuti nafshe. He's trying to get a sheep in order to pay it back. He has the sheep, and if he's not willing to give it back, it means that he's stealing it for himself. So now Rashi asks Akasha. The Shema Toma, perhaps is the following scenario: Ovad mimenu, he lost this sheep, and he realizes he has to pay. If he admits that he received the sheep, then immediately the tovah is going to force him to pay up. Vishtametle Adamishkachle. He's trying to avoid that situation where he's going to be forced to pay if he doesn't have the money to pay. So again, even though he lost the sheep and he's chayav, let's say for example, Shomer Socher is chayav for Gneiv Aveda, or maybe this is the case of Shomer Chinam and he's chayav because of Pshia, he doesn't have the money to pay for the object that's lost, and therefore he's ishtamuti komishtamit. Why do you assume every kofer v'pikadon is automatically, ipso facto, a ganav, meaning he's a ganav on a be'en that he's holding on to, there's no ishtamuti komishtamit, and therefore he's hotzel kafer, and he's posel yed, he's posel shvua. And for Rashi, you know what case we're talking about? When we talk about kofer v'pikadon, take a look in the Gemara later on Daf Hei Amud Beis, and you'll see that mukminale, that we have to interpret this case of kofer b'pikadon b'di asu sahadi v'amri. What are the Eidim testifying? Not that he deposited two sheep in his possession, but ahi shaita, I know that right now when he's denying it, b'yadei nakitle, he has it stashed away, he's got it locked away in a pen. So we know that he's holding on to the object. It's not lost. And therefore, he's a ganav. He's really stealing something. And the Torah says, Al teishis rasha eid, you cannot trust a rasha. This is called a rasha de chamos, meaning he's stealing money. So that's the sugya that we learned yesterday. Ella, the Gemara says that I still have a pircha on the kal v'chomer. What is common to both Eid Echad and Moda b'miktas? Malat zara shavish ben shekein einon b'toras hazoma. Now, what does that mean, einon b'toras hazoma? If, let's say, two Eidim testify against Reuven that he couldn't have possibly been there at that time to testify, do we accept the testimony of Reuven? Obviously not. I mean, there is Azom against Eid Echad. If there's Azom against two Eidim, how much more so is Azom against Eid Echad? So what does it mean, Eina B'Toras Azom? So Rashi says, Tomar B'Eidim Im Huzmu B'Chamishim She'idu Meshalmim Chamishim Meshalmim Momon. Very strange. What about Eid Echad? So Rashi says, Eid Echad Shehuzam Potu. So the Torah imposes a penalty on the Eidim Zomimim that they have to pay up, even though they, Lamaisa, they didn't do any damage. But that's the Torah. The Torah says, you had an intention, you gave the Eidus, and therefore you have to pay. In a case of Misa, they would get the capital punishment. But Rashi says that doesn't apply to Eid Echad. We have a pasuk that says, Ad Shiyazumu Shneihem. We have to be mazim both Eidim. If there's only one Eid, we can't be mazim two Eidim. So as far as the Eidus is concerned, we're going to throw out the Eidus. Hazoma is meaningful and effective even against one Eid. But as far as Kashazoma, I'm imposing upon him the punishment of what he wanted to mete out, there's no din of Hazan.
What would he have meted out on Eid Echad?
He's supporting the claim of the Malveh.
Right, but he wouldn't meet
at the Malveh.
Based on him, you wouldn't have to pay.
Oh, excellent question. So there's no Kasha Zomam here. So I don't even have to invoke the principle of Achi Yazumu Shnehem, and I could just say that there's no Zomam.
You can punish him by making him swear. Right? Oh. Sounds odd.
So here I want to tell you a Chiddush. I'm trying to remember if I heard this from the Rav. Just give me one second. Yeah. I heard this from the Rav in the name of his father. We have halacha called Kasha Zoma. Now, if we translate Kasha Zoma, if we take it literally, it means we have to analyze what was his intention. Or in the case of two Eidim, what was their intention? And the Torah says, Vasisim lo Kasha Zoma. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik asked the following question: is it really dependent upon his intention? Do we have to do a psychological analysis of what his intention was? He's telling us a story. He's giving us testimony. Maybe he doesn't even know what the implications of his testimony are. So Rav Moshe said, l'chora, at face value, I would say it all depends upon his intention. Why? Because the Gemara says in Masechta Ksubis that in a case where two Edim testify against a woman that she had znus, they can claim lesser al bailabon. Don't give us misa because we only came to testify that she's asur al baila.
Where does Dvorim Shebelev fit into this? Doesn't it contradict?
I wouldn't say it's relevant to Dvorim Shebelev, yeah. Although after Rav Moshe's Chiddush, you might say that it is Dvorim Shebelev. But the Torah says Kasha Zomam. The Torah says we have to mete out the punishment to the Edom as they intended. We don't know what they intended. So how can we mete out a punishment and give them Misa when they claim lesser al bailavon? And the Gemara goes on and says that the only reason we can give them Misa is because they gave a Hasra and they said to her, if you go ahead with this action, you're going to be killed. So that indicates their intention. So that was Rav Moshe's initial position. He thought that maybe we should take this literally, and it really depends upon his zmum, on his actual intention. So Rav Moshe threw this out, and he said that's not the pshat. He said that kasha zomam is a din in the edus itself. It's not a din in the psychological conscious mind of the aid and what his intention was. And he proved it. The Gemara says that according to Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, we pass it like Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, Zebab if they atzma umeid, v'zebab if they atzma umeid. That you can have, it's a sugya in Sanhedrin Daf Lamed, you can have each aid testifying in Bezdin on his own, and Bezdin is going to put the two testimonies together to create an Eidus of Shnei Eid. Now, Reuven comes into Bezdin, Shimon is not there. Who's going to guarantee that another Eid is going to come in? And yet, if another Eid comes in, then we're Mitzarif the two Eidim, and if there's Hazoma, they'll pay under the law of Kasha Zoma. Frechter of Moshe, I don't understand. What do you mean, Zebov if Neyatsu made it? Zebov if Neyatsu made it? Kasha Zomam, he only came to testify in a Shvuah. He doesn't know that there's another aid that's going to come in. Could be the second aid might know of the first aid, but it doesn't work in both directions. So based on this Gemara, Rav Moshe said that Hasra is part of Eidus. We think that Asra is just the condition in Eidus, but Asra is part of the Eidus, meaning when two Eidim testify against someone that they're Chai of Misa, let's say in that case, it could be Malchus as well, they testify in Asra, that's part of the Averas Halav, meaning the violation of the Lav comprises, I'm looking for another, anyway, it constitutes two dimensions. Number one, the actual Avera per se, and number two, the Averas Hasra. The violation of the Hasra, and he has to be Makabal Hasra. When he's Makabal in Hasra, he says Afal Pichen, and then he goes ahead and does his action. So when the Eidim testify about the Hasra, they're not just testifying that we can mete out this punishment, but that's part of their testimony. So Rav Moshe said the following. Kasha Zomam doesn't depend on the psychological intention of the Eidim. It depends on the nature of the Eidus. Is the nature of the Eidus to be Mechayev Misa, or is it to be Lesser Al Baila? As soon as the Eidim add the Hasra to the equation, they change the entire nature of the Eidus. They're now testifying in an Avera that was not just a, you know, Chil Shabbos or whatever it was, but it was a Chil Shabbos with a Kabbalas Hasra. Afal Pichin, I'm gonna violate the Shabbos. That changes the Eidus and it makes the Eidus into an Eidus Lemisa.
And if nobody shows up, if I'm the first A-list, I'm testifying to it, right? So basically, I'm doing nothing. I'm making it easy for somebody else to come and then attach myself on. But how is this A-list mechayev?
It's mechayev a shvuah.
Yeah, yeah. No, let's say about Misa, okay? Or about Malkus, right? So I'm not mechayev.
No, in Misa, you're right. It might be more complicated. But I want to just.
But Hasra doesn't relate.
I'm using Asura to point out that the Avis itself has to be indicative in and of itself. So the Eidim may say we're naive, you know, and they're coming up with some, you know, oh, I thought this, I thought that, you know. We don't give Asura to Eidim Zomim, by the way. That's a sugi, the third pack of sumas that we learned right here in this room. So we don't know, you know, exactly what the Eidim have in their mind. We didn't say to the two Edom, don't you realize that you are being Machayev, this guy Misa, and if you're Edom Zomim, we're going to put you to death. That's already built into the Edom. That's objective. Objective and not subjective. So Rav Moshe wanted to suggest that we see that clearly from the case of Rav Yishuv ben Karcha, where each aid came separately, and yet they're both subject to Hazomah, because Bezalel is going to be Mitzarif them. And yet, if you ask me what his intention was to be Machayev Shvuah. Said Rav Moshe, you see something very clear. Eid Echad is not coming to be Mechayev Shvuah. Eid Echad is coming to be Mechayev Mammon. Again, I'm not saying a psychological principle. Please don't misunderstand me. But I'm saying in the Gufa Shel Eidus, the Eidus itself is an Eidus L'Chayev Mammon. It's not Eidus L'Chayev Shvuah. If no other Eid comes in, so the halacha is that we weigh the taina of the nitba against the claim of against the testimony of the aid, and we say it's like it's close to shava b'shava. What we need to equal it out is going to be a shvuah. Can anyone in this room prove to me that a echad is eidus l'chayev mamon before we get to hazomah? Excellent, mitoch sheni yochel shava mishalim. If a person can't take a shvuah, he pays. Where's the edus? We have halacha al pishnayim edim yakum dolar. You know, it can, all the evidence that you could accrue, in the, you know, all the umdunas is not enough. So maybe edachon you'll say is an umdunah, therefore he has to pay. No, you don't pay with an umdunah. Like the Gemara has a case in Bava Kama where you find a camel standing next to another animal and it's shooting off pebbles. And then you find another animal that dies, you know, because again, it's a pebble wound. You still can't be Machayev, you need two Eidim, you know what I'm saying? So that if Eid Echad is Machayev Mammon in the case of any Yochel Ishava, again, this might depend upon the famous Machlokas, what if any Rotzel Ishava, any Yochel Ishava, but let's say if we go with that Shita, that even if it's any Yochel Ishava he has to pay, it means Vas Likdin Em Eidus, you know, what's inherent in the Eidus, that they are being made. I'm sorry, he is being made to be Mechayev Mammon. Is Memela, what our Gemara is telling me now is that in Hilchas Kasher Zomam, we should apply the principle of Kasher Zomam to the Eid Echad. And yet the Torah says there is no din of Kasher Zomam in Eid Echad. It's Ad She'ezu Mishneihem. So that despite the fact that the Eidus itself is Eidus Mammon, meaning Lechayev Mammon, and now two Eidim were Mazim this Eid, nevertheless, we don't apply the principle of Hazoma, of Kasher Zoma. But I don't understand the Gemara.
Aren't you mixing the Rabbonin and the Lash?
No. I see, Eliezer, you're into that. Yeah. You're a heavy Dorais and Rabbonin man. I can tell from the two times we met.
Right.
Now, everything we're saying is Dorais, but listen carefully. I'll tell you why this Gemara makes no sense to me.
Shana, Yachol Shava. Shein Yehud Shavu Yishalim
is Dorais. For sure.
Excuse me?
Yeah. It's not a Takonis Hefker business. Wait, just 1 second. Do you want to slug up the Gemara?
No. Before you get to the Gemara,
I'm so eager to slug up. This Gemara makes no sense to me.
Can you reframe Moshe's idea as saying that the Eidus is an Eidus about an event which you would be responsible to pay for?
Okay.
Not that I'm just the event. Well, if it's true, then you are Chayav Misi, Chayav Mammon, I might have the power to bring right. this to
that formulation would help me understand how we mitzarif the two witnesses.
That's what
they're both testifying on the same event.
Yeah.
So that's in general a Chakira. What are Edim testifying? Are they testifying on an event or are they testifying on a Chiyuv? You know, the result of that event. And that's basically a sugi in the second parak of Kiddushin about whether Shliach Nasa Eid or not. You know, if Eidus is on the Maisa, then he's testifying in his own maisa. But if Eidus is on the chiyuv, he's only a shliach, so he's not testifying on his own. He's not an ageya b'Eidus. But leave that out for a second. Here's why this gemara makes no sense. If anybody can make sense out of this gemara, please help me out over here. What difference does it make whether Eid Echad is subject to the law of Kasha Zomim or not? I'm trying to deal with the reliability of the Eidus. What level of, you know, how do you say it in English, Hadragah, how do I rate the level of Nemanus or his Chayvus that comes through Eidus? Are you going to tell me that Eid Echad has more of a reliability than two Eidim? And why? Because two Eidim are subject to Hazama and they have to pay Kasha Zomam. Eid Echad is subject to Hazama but he doesn't pay Kasha Zomam. What's going on over here? All I care is whether or not you could be Mavatal Eidus. Once two Eidim testify against Eid Echad, Imadu Ayisam, and you couldn't have been there at the side of this, the Eidus is completely Batal and Mavutal. It's not worth a dime. So the Gemara is saying, well, you can't make a Kal v'chomer from Piv and Eid Echad, because Malu Piv v'Eid Echad Shekein Eino Ba'azama, Tomar B'Eidim Sheyeshna Ba'azama, because Eidus is vulnerable to Azama. That makes it an iffy kind of proposition or enterprise. Name that same parsha of Azama that applies to two Eidim applies to Eid Echad as well with a Kal v'chomer. Certainly the testimony of Eid Echad is null and void. It's not worth a dime once there's Azama. You want to know whether we give Kasha Zomam or not and Dil Dini Onshim and Knas and so forth, that's already a different discussion. But that has nothing to do with Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya is trying to establish that if an Eid Echad could be Mechayim v'Shvua, how much more so two Eidim could be Mechayim v'Shvua. So you tell me, no, that's not true because Eid Echad is not vulnerable, he's not subject to Azama, whereas two Eidim are subject to Azama. What's the Gemara talking about over here?
Now, Zama doesn't have to do with the reliability of the Eidus, it seems to me. Hazama is just a din, a special din that's a deterrent.
Correct, that's
that functions as a deterrent for Eidim to
but
come alive.
But let me ask you a question. If two Eidim testify against one Eid, that Imanu Ayisim, you couldn't have possibly been there to have seen Alva because you were with us in Chicago, right? We always used to use Chicago as a far off place. Is that a chidush that we believe the two Eidim against one Eid? For sure not. Two Eidim are that much more reliable than one Eid. In Trey, in the case of Hazama, that's a chidush. Why do we believe the second pair of Eidim, not the first pair of Eidim? We'll never know the answer to that question. I mean, you know, the Rebbe Chanan Wasserman has a whole thesis that he thinks he understands why we believe the second pair of Eidim, not the first. It's a chidush. But in the case of two Eidim that are Mazim, one Eidim, I don't need any chidushim here. For sure we believe the second pair of Eidim, who are Mazim the first Eidim. So what are you telling me? That Eid Echad is Mechayev Shvua because Eid Echad has one up and on two Eidim. Why? Because he's not subject to Azama. Moshachas, what do you mean he's not subject to Azama? The Dinim of Onshim and Knossos that apply when it's two Eidim and not to one Eidim. But what does that have to do with this whole thing? It's totally irrelevant. Maybe that's what the Gemara means in the next line. Let's read one more line in the Gemara. But again, that doesn't help you with the Havamin of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Lo Kasha. Rabbi Chiya Toras Azama Lo Parach. He's not going to accept a pircha that's based on Torah's Hazoma. In other words, this extra chumrah in two Eidim that is Kasha Zomam in two Eidim, but in Eid Echad there's no Kasha Zomam to punish him for what he intended to do, that's not a pircha. Why? Because all we have to know is whether Hazoma can undermine and completely smash the reliability of the original evidence, in this case of Eid Echad. And for sure, Azama is certainly operative against Eid Echad. But I don't know what the Havamin of this Gemara was.
I don't understand. I don't understand your difficulty with the Gemara.
Because you don't empathize.
No. I mean, it's not
in this case.
It's not an issue of intent. It's an issue of objective reality.
Yeah.
No, because it seems to me that it's true. Eid Echad is not subject to Hazama. Okay, but you can't infer anything about reliability for that. That may simply be because an Eid Echad, the Eidus of the Eid Echad is not strong enough to be Mechayev the Onesh.
Right.
Okay, but what so therefore the whole the chiddush of Edim Zomimim, that you give the onish to the Edim, wouldn't apply to Edim.
I agree with you 1001%. That's why I don't understand, why does the Gemara present this as a parable? Again, what was Rav Chiya's logic? Rav Chiya's logic was that if in case X you Mechayev Shvua, because there's circumstantial evidence that indicates that the Tove is telling the truth and the Nitba is lying, so we need a Shvua, then how much more so in the case of two Edim? That was Rav Chiya. No. In Eid Echad, I'll tell you why he's Mechayev Shvua, because Eid Echad is not subject to Azom.
So makes him stronger than two Edim.
Correct. Where? What makes him stronger than two Edim? Again, it's halacha that
the
Edim,
the fact that
it's the weakness of, yes, as you point out, yes, very well, the weakness of the Eid Echad is that's why he's not the Torah Sazom. So but not because of the strength.
A Pircha would only work to say, but since the two Edim came in Chayvashvur, they're much a lower quality than the.
Correct. So I understand very well the original slew of Pirchas where the Gemara sets up situations where Piv, for example, is in collision with two Edim, and we believe him and we don't believe the two Edim. That gives the Eid Echad a superpower that supersedes that of two Edim. So therefore, Eid Echad is, and therefore Piv is Mechayev Shvua, and, or for example, if you want to tell me that Piv is Mechayev Karbon, you know, whereas two Edim are not Mechayev Karbon. That I understand. Again, it's not a logical preposition, but within the framework of Kal Vachomer, I understand. I've come up with a case in which the Torah gives a tremendous power and authority and reliance on Eid Echad, and it doesn't rely on the two Edim. So that I can understand. Or, for example, if you tell me that Piv is not subject to Hazom, I understand that. Why? Because I don't believe the two Edim against Piv. I believe him, because he's Kimei Edim Domi. But in the case of Eid Echad, it's just that we have a tour of Onshim, and we're going to alleviate the punishment of Kashazom in the case of Eid Echad. I don't understand what was the Gemara thinking when they thought that would be a Pircha on the Kal Vachomer of Reb Chiya. I don't see it as a valid Havamim.
If you want, you gave 2 days ago, you said this formula that Kal Vachomers are not based on logic. It's just an algorithm or a game theory of some sort. And now when you're asking this Pircha, you're saying no, but after all, it has to go with Kal Vachomer, which makes sense. It's called Kal Vachomer.
If
one aspect doesn't have the aspect that the other does, then you cannot learn one out from the other.
No, but only if the two aspects are...
It has to be Kal Vachomer.
Correct. They're in the same...
Okay.
We're trying to figure out under what circumstances the Torah rely on Piv, under what circumstances on Eid Echad, we're not dealing with Dini Onshim here. You know, the fact that Eid Echad is part of Onshim, maybe he didn't do such a dastardly crime as a cohort, you know, when two Edim come together as a partnership, okay, that's Dini Onshim. But Reb Chiya is not talking about Dini Onshim. Reb Chiya is talking about evidence in a court. To what extent does the Torah rely on evidence? If the Torah relies on Eid Echad, how much more so the Torah would rely on two Edim? If Eid Echad is Mechayev Shvua against the Nitba, how much more so is the Torah going to rely on two Edim? That's a very solid, you know, what do you call it, an algorithm? Is that the word you use? Or whatever it is, you know. But to slug it up because the Eid Echad is Potter from Onshim, you know, if I was trying to derive from this Kal Vachomer a halacha of what punishment to mete out, I would say maybe we should be more compassionate in the case of an Eid Echad than in the case of two Eid. But that's not the subject on the, you know, that's not on the thing. That's not on the table. Ella, now the Gemara says the following. I have a different kind of kasha objection to Reb Chiya. And what is that? Dika'omar v'tana tana. You remember that Reb Chiya, after he established his Kal Vachomer, he proved his Kal Vachomer, he brought a raya to his conclusion from our Mishnah of Shnayim Oksin v'talas. That's called Tana Tuna. And we find a Mishnah that supports us. Here's where the Gemara has an objection. Now watch this. It could be that at this stage in the Gemara we accept the Kal Vachomer of Reb Chiya, but we object to his raya. So you may ask me, why does Gemara have to spend all this time in rejecting a raya? So there's no raya, but he has a Kal Vachomer, and we've established the Kal Vachomer. So I think what the Gemara is interested in here is Rabbi Chiya Toras Hazama Lo Parch. In other words, we're asking about what qualifies as a pircha against the Kal Vachomer. Does Toras Hazama qualify or not? Well, Rabbi Chiya took a position, and he was of the opinion that Toras Hazama is irrelevant. It doesn't constitute, qualify as a valid pircha. We hold that Toras Hazama is a valid pircha. So now we need a very strong proof to establish Rabbi Chiya. I'll give you another example. In the case of Piv, would Piv have a superior status, more authority than two Edom? So the Gemara says that if there's a clash between two Edom and Piv in the case of Karban, Achal Techelev, so we don't believe the Edom, we believe him. Hence he's potter from a Karban. So the Gemara says, how is Rabbi Chiya going to derive a Kal Vachomer from Piv? You see that Piv is greater than two Edom, so it makes sense that Piv is Mechayev Shvua, not two Edom. So the Gemara answers that Rabbi Chiya holds like Rabbi Meir. Now, if Rabbi Chiya is standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Meir, he really needs a raya, because we don't necessarily accept Rabbi Meir. So if there's a collision between two Edom and the Nidon as to whether he ate Chalev and he's Chayev Shvua, or he didn't eat Chayev Karban, or he didn't eat Chalev and he's not Chayev Karban, so Rabbi Meir says we believe the Edom, but we hold the Chacham reject Rabbi Meir. They hold that he doesn't have to bring a Karban because he denies that he ate the Chalev. So the Gemara here has vested interests here, and Rabbi Chiya has a lot invested here in the Raya itself. So let's just go over the Raya of Rabbi Chiya from Shnayim Oksav Vitalis, because ostensibly when you learn the Mishnah of Shnayim Oksav Vitalis, it has nothing to do with Rabbi Chiya. We really have to dream it a finger, if you know what I mean. I remember the Rav got very angry at somebody. He asked the Talmud in the Shia to explain something. So the guy kept going like this. So the Rav says to him, I don't want to hear what your fingers have to say. Just tell me what you have to say. So there's a real dre over here of Rav Chiya. How does Rav Chiya bridge the gap between Shnayim Oksav Vitalis and two Edom who testify on half the claim? So the Gemara presents the following thesis. And here, Eliezer, you have to hear this very well. That the Shvua of Shnayim Oksav Vitalis is Doraisa. That's Rav Chiya's premise. Again, we don't accept that premise. We hold like Rav Yochanan that the entire institution of a Shvua in Shnayim Oksav Vitalis is a rabbinic enterprise. But according to Rav Chiya, it's a Doraisa. Now, we only know of three categories of a Shvua Doraisa. It doesn't fit into any of them. We have a Shvua Sashomrim. This is certainly not a case of Shvua Sashomrim, two people holding on to a talis. We have a Shvuas Eid Echad. There are no Edom here. The two people, if there were Edom, we would know what to do with this talis, but we don't have any Edom. And it's a Shvuas Moda B'miksa. So by default, if there's a Shvua Doraisa here, in the case of Shnayim Oksav Vitalis, it's got to be what? Moda B'miksa. Where's the Moda B'miksa? Comes along with Chiya, and he introduces the concept of Anan Sadi. What happens over here? If, let's say, Ruvain is holding on to half the talis, we have a principle like Chazokat Kol Mashitachas Yad Adam Shalom. So we have, in effect, the Gemara says, in Anan Sadi, that Ruvain owns half the talis. Shimon, on the other hand, is claiming that he owns the full talis, the whole talis. We have two Edom to testify, again, two Edom in inverted commas, right, against Shimon, that Ruvain certainly owns half the talis. Where are these two Edom? Tfisa, right? Kol Mashitachas Yad Adam, he's grabbing onto half the talis, and therefore we have Edim, Kiilu, and Anan Sadi, the Gemara calls it, that he owns half the talis. So when Shimon claims that he owns the whole talis, we have two Edim against him on half the talis. That's why the Mishnah says he has to take a Shmur on the other half. Not because of a Drabbanan, as Rabbi Yochanan has it, that was on the back of Daf Gimel, but rather because of the Shvuah Doraisa of Rabbi Chiya of Moda B'miktzas, that when two Edom testify in half the claim, then the Mitzvah has to take a Shvuah on the other half of the claim. Where does Reuven have two Edom on half the claim? Because his Tfisa proves that he owns half the talis, and that generates an Anan Sadi.
It's a matter of
Rabbanan. No, but that's not logical. That's...
You said matter of Rabbanan. not the Rabbanan of...
Of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that the whole Shavu in that Mishnah was a rabbinic enactment. There are many Shavuos that are the Rabbanan, like Mishpah Menotel, okay. Many, you know, Takonis with the Chacham said, we're not going to give you the money without, or let you off the hook without taking your Shavu. This is the example. And the Gemara has a whole elaborate explanation why the Rabbanan, in this case of Shnayim Oksim Metalis, instituted this rabbinic Shavuah and so forth and so on. That's not Rabbi Chiya. You know, we have to be very careful. Rabbi Chiya holds that the Shavuah and Amishn is Doraisa. It's a Shavuah's Moda Mimikzas. Where's the Moda Mimikzas? The fact that two Edim testify against the claim of the Nitba, well, let's call Shimon the Nitba, because once Reuven is holding on to half the talus, there's Eidus, virtual Eidus, that he, Reuven, owns half the talus. When Shimon claims the entire talus is mine, we have at least a pair of Eidim, so to speak, the Anan Sadi, to undermine half of his claim. And that, according to Rav Chiya, generates a Shavuah D'Oraisa. That's called Tani Tuna.
Who said that?
This is Rav Chiya.
That explanation doesn't seem plausible to me. Because when Shimon says Kula Shali, when he says I own the whole talus, what he's saying is that I am now a witness that half the talus is not Reuven's talus. In other words, there's not.
I'm not sure what you mean by witness. You get me nervous.
We're talking about
the Baldover.
His claim.
Okay. If
we say Anan Sadeh on the claims, right? That's what.
I'm not sure what it means on the tfisa. No,
once
he has a tfisa, there's an Anan Sadeh. That we, Bezdin, can testify that he owns half the talus.
But then he's saying, I own the whole talus.
But he's only grabbing half. The Eidus, so to speak, are only on half.
So the Eidus is undermining his claim on half the talus. That's exactly Rav Chiya.
The Eidus is the possession, is the tfisa.
Correct. And that's the Gemara. I'll read to you the Gemara's language. Tani Tuna, it's on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. And his language is as follows. Vitani Tuna, just 1 second. Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, this is on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, about 9 lines up from the top, from the bottom, excuse me, 9 lines up from the bottom. Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, Zeomer Animitzasia, Vechule, the Gemara doesn't quote the whole Mishnah. Hacha, Kaman de Tafis, again, he has a tfis on half the talis. Again, you could say this in both directions, but let's just focus on Reuven for a moment. It doesn't matter, I can talk about Shimon. Came in the Tophis, Anan Sadi, Demai the Tophis, Didehu, right? Shalohu. So therefore, he has an Anan Sadi on half the talus. Well, that means that we've disproven at least half of the claim of Shimon, because Shimon claims he has the entire talus. Rashi says, Anan Sahadi, Demai de Tophis Hai Hainu Palga, right? Hai means he's holding on to half. Didehu, Shari Muksa Kula Bifanenu. Bifanenu means in front of Bezdin. Vareu Tovea Eskula. The other one is claiming the whole thing. Correct? So once he's co-fair on that half, right, because he's not only claiming half, he's claiming the other half, which the other guy is Tophis on. Then on that half, we have already Eidus, and therefore Yesh. Rashi says, "Ono miidin oso sheyesh ba miktsas." So we have a testimony against half of his claim, undermining half of his claim. It's therefore Yesh lechayves chaver shvuah al ashar dino alchetzi sheikev liatzmo. So the Gemara says, "Name." We cannot accept this equation with Shnayim Oksim V'Talis. Mi Dami. Hasam Lemalva Islay Sahadi Lelova Lesley Sahadi. Right? In the classic case of Moda B'Miktsas, the Malva brings the two Edom on half the claim. That's Rav Chiya's case. The Lova has no testimony at all. So right now, the Lova is in a very bad situation. He has no evidence whatsoever to support his claim. On the contrary, the Malva has evidence because he has Edom to testify in half the claim. That has nothing to do with Shnayim Oksim V'Talis, because in Shnayim Oksim V'Talis, each one has testimony, has Edus, the Anan Sadi, on half the claim. The Gemara adds the following. If the Lover could produce Eidim that he only owns the 50 that the Eidim are testifying about, but I have Eidus to support my claim on the other 50, so in such a case, he would not take a Shmuah. And therefore, in Rav Chiya's case, where each one has a Tfisa, the Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, and each one therefore has Eidus on half the Talis, because my the toughest high is Anan Sadi the Deu. So it's in effect a case where you have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven brings two Eidim on 50 to support his claim that Shimon owes him 50. Shimon brings two Eidim on the other 50, that 50 is his and he doesn't owe that 50. Is why would there be a Shmuah in such a case? Meaning the logic of Rav Chiya that there should be a Chiyuv Shmuah makes sense in Rav Chiya's case, but not in the case of Shnayim Oksim Vitalis. There's no logical justification for a Shmuah in the case of Shnayim Oksim Vitalis. Lo boy Rav Chiya l'shtabuye, according to the logic of Rav Chiya, there should be no Chiyuv Shmuah in the case of Shnayim Oksim Vitalis. B'kihechi danan sadi Baha'i, just to the same extent that we, through the Tfisa, the Achiza, we have two Eidim on behalf of Reuven on half the Talis, is Anan Sadi Baha'i. We have two Eidim on behalf of Shimon. So why would the Mishnah say Afilu Hachi Mishtavi? It can't be because of Modu Miktsas, because on the part that he is denying, so to speak, he has two Eidim. So why would he have to take a Shmuah? We're going to have to come up with Rabbi Yochanan's formulation that the reason for the Shmuah in our Mishnah is because it's a Durabbanon, a Shmuah Durabbanon. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, Masnisen ki hechi danan sadi lahai de chetzi shalo, anan sadi lahai de chetzi shalo. Why do we have a need for a Shmuah? Shmamina, we must derive the conclusion, de labi shemodu miksatainahu, it's not like Rabbi Chiya, So later on, the Gemara is going to try to reformulate the Tana Tuna, and that Belinetta will do tomorrow. Okay, then. Now, do we